The Bloodstream podcast is made possible by Takeda and is intended for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. Please consult with professionals before making any healthcare decisions.
If I had a nickel for every time somebody said, it's more important than ever, that is exactly it. It's a time for us to get really intentional and really just keep that message going that mental health is just as important as physical health.
That voice belongs to Bleeding Disorders community member and Mental Health Matters to founder Debbie De La Riva, who joins Amy and me to discuss Mental Health Awareness Month, Mental Illness Awareness Week, and the October 10th World Mental Health Day screening of Believe Limited's latest documentary, Let's Talk, a screening that will be followed by a panel discussion and Q&A with guests from The Mighty, The Courageous Parents Network, and the Rare Disease Film Festival. There's a link in the program notes for more, and shout out to Senevi Genzyme for supporting Let's Talk. And of course, quick reminder for those listening in real time that tonight, October 9th, music legend Peter Frampton, Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown, and numerous other rare disease advocates join me. That's a group of people you'd expect to hear in the same sentence as being honored by NORD with the Rare Impact Award. The Rare Impact Awards show that also features an appearance by community advocate Alex Borstein and a number from Hemophilia the Musical. What a lineup. All that's happening tonight, if you're listening in real time, October 9th, 7 p.m. Eastern. Link in the program notes for more. And now that I have said all of that, let me next say hello and welcome to the Bloodstream Podcast. I'm host Patrick James Lynch, joined as I am each week by nonprofit and policy-loving co-host Amy Bord. Ms. Bordo, hello, Amy. How do you do this fine day?
Hello. I'm doing well. I have to admit that I did the longest workout I've ever done in my entire life today, which was 47 minutes. I'm not a workout person. I was a dancer growing up and then like a musical theater person. So I was like, oh, I'll just do a show and dance and things.
Yeah.
And I've run and I hike and things, but I have 100% lost my strength because I'm now old. And it just a few months ago actually realized like, oh, I should like work out. And so I got an app and I've been doing this like 90, and feel free to make fun of me. My boyfriend makes fun of this name, but he also thinks it's charming. I'm doing a 90-day sleigh workout thing.
Yeah.
And today I did 47 minutes of like HIIT strength training.
Nice.
Craziness. Good. And I looked in the mirror and I have those like Courtney Cox shoulders. Like if I was famous and I would have Courtney Cox shoulders that I could show off in like evening gowns. Suck it, everybody. Suck it.
I mean, I just hear social media content. That's all I'm hearing. But good for you for discovering like working out. That's And 47 minutes. So that's the new benchmark. Are we trying to like eclipse that each week or is that part of the slaying? Where are you like, in the slaying?
You know, it was very daunting today of like 47 minutes.
That's a long
time. It just felt insane. And Rob makes fun of me all the time because I talk. So it's like an audio, you know, app things. But so I have this trainer my strength trainer, her name is Mary O. And I literally talk and fight with her the whole time. And Rob thinks it's hilarious. I'll be like, Mary, no, absolutely not. Because she'd be like, try it with the dumbbell this time. I'll be like, Mary, absolutely not.
And to be clear, this is all pre-recorded from Mary, right?
100% pre-recorded from Mary. I follow her on Instagram. I would love to think that we'd be friends in real life, but I don't know if that's the case. But she's kicking my butt and it's great. And now I have Courtney Cox arms.
Wow. Well, hey, I feel like I'm learning boxing because I take classes on the Peloton thing with people who teach punches. And I'm like,
really?
Oh, this is like boxing class. Yeah. And I'm being a little facetious, but I actually feel like it's true. I'm like, okay, now I like know some stuff about my upper body and like how to use stuff. You know,
that's so cool.
It's kind of good. Like, I'm not looking to, but, you know, real talk, I have been hit in the face by strangers on the street a few times before in my life because the world spins and weirdos walk amongst it. But, hey, it's cool now. I'm like, this is where to hold my body and how to do things. So, shout out to pre-recorded workouts.
This quarantine thing for introverts, this is like our Coachella. Like we're like, yes, we can bloom, we can blossom in quarantine. So like the whole working out that there's not pressure to like go to a workout class and I can just do it in my home and not feel weird. It's like, woo.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. It also makes the act of just binging content, really of any kind, totally acceptable. So 100%. It's like we don't have to hide the guilty pleasures. We're allowed to just talk openly for 25 minutes at the start of a meeting about crime dramas that we like to watch, a docuseries. Hypothetically, of course, you know, hypothetically here, I believe we're a lot more productive.
True but crime.
I did want to actually bring up one particular piece of content that's been in pop culture recently, and that's Social Dilemma on Netflix. And I know we mentioned it just briefly. We haven't talked about this, but it is Mental Health Awareness Month. This is Mental Illness Awareness Week, and tomorrow is World Mental Health Day. And while Social Dilemma is not a mental health documentary, it certainly has elements to it that are very appropriate for this month. So let's just get your take off the top. I guess maybe tell people a little like what exactly it is, because I haven't done that. And then what were your first responses to it?
Yeah, so The Social Dilemma is a doc on Netflix. If you have not checked it out, I highly recommend it. It was one of those things. You said this too when we were like talking about it before. It feels like we knew the information. It's like, oh yeah, yeah, we know that this is happening, but like to see it in, I don't know, real time, and to get like a whole spectrum of what social media is and the industry, like what the industry is, and also how the industry is monetized. And I think that's the issue with social media. The folks that are at the epicenter of this, there's actually a movement to, you know, create more humane technology and more humane social media. Mm-hmm. But it's basically the journey of how this whole thing started. I mean, we know, you know, the social media platforms. Everybody said no one started out like this. No one ever thought that this would be something that would be such a weight on all of us in terms of our focus, in terms of our mental health, in terms of what we think is normal in the world, and also what we believe. But I think there is, it was just a Pandora's box almost in a way. So I'm kind of spewing, but I would love to get your take on what that documentary was to you, and what were some of your takeaways.
I mean, like you said, it's not anything that was necessarily unknown, but it was so definitive and irrefutable.
Yeah.
And to hear from founder and chief financial officer after chief growth officer after chief whatever thing, from company after company after company after company, and they're all saying more or less the same sort of things about how everyone is so highly targeted, and the ethical lines it blurs, and how there's just no real like oversight over any of it, and it's just gotten out of control. And I certainly don't let my kids interact with it in these ways. It just, and I think the thing that it did that maybe what was the doc from a few years ago about Cambridge Analytica in particular?
Yes. We were trying to think of the name last night. The Great Hack, or
that or something quite like it.
Yeah,
but that's like the Facebook one, and Facebook is, you know, there's plenty to look at there. But this really makes it an industry-wide case. One of the things that comes up, I don't think they spend too much time on it, but it does come up, is teen suicide rates.
Yes.
And like there are elements, and this comes up in the film, there are elements to social media that are like any other advancement and breakthrough disruptive moment in human history where, you know, we're sort of like, well, what is this? And we don't quite figure it out. And then we eventually adapt. And there's some older individual who's making exactly that argument at a certain point. But what is not accounted for in that argument is that we have never had the technological ability to communicate and pass information around at such a rapid pace. Like, not every innovation was the printing press either. This changes the way the whole world communicates, and like no one's really exactly in charge of it. And like all of China has a restricted version of what the internet is. And it's so, but on the other hand, as we well know, and kind of tying this in another way to mental illness, having just brought up suicide, is it also is a place for people to connect who otherwise would maybe never find each other. And I know that from the rare disease world, and over 10 years ago when I first started trying to make connections with people, that's how I did it. I mean, that's what I did I was going to events and I was meeting people, but the reason that I started to know people was not because we spent 2 hours together in a room where someone was talking and like we waved from across the while holding stale coffee, but because we interacted online over and over again and shared news and questions and like, what does this mean to you? And found each other. Mm-hmm. And that's really valuable. And that's one of the things that Natalie and I have been wrestling with since watching this, is that on one hand, like, it really just makes me want to either just throw it all away,
or
just like run full steam in the direction of like the kind of lead talking head character guy, where it's like, okay, we can only do this in a certain sort of way because it's otherwise just too much. And like, maybe that's the move, but it just, there's so much good that I can't throw it away. That doesn't feel right. That just doesn't, I know just from my own experience, there's too much good that comes from participating. The question is how to participate. But I mean, honestly, Amy, even as I say that to you, if we're only participants though, in someone else's universe, so to speak, and the controllers of that universe are not looking out for those of us participating in it, which I would argue they're not, then maybe that's a false line of thinking.
I think so too. I think one of the things that blew my mind was, I've never seen it this way, but how they generate, you know, how these companies make money is they're paying for our engagement. You know, we as a human species, they're paying for our engagement. So they want us to come, they're trying to figure out ways for us to come back to these pages and to look at these pages like Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, over and over and over and over and over again. And advertisers are paying for our engagements. And so, you know, there are, one of the things we did after watching it, Rob and I turned off all of our notifications. Like we turned off everything because, and I, you know, even news, stuff like that, it's like, you know what, there's a digestible time of day where I can go in and look at the news without having it pop up over and over and over, especially here in this election cycle. But that was interesting to me. And the other thing is what we see, how our timelines are curated. And this is known as well, but there are these algorithms, you know, these mythical, magical, you know, mathematical algorithms that are created by like a small group of people inside a company, inside Facebook, like 6 or 7 people in this company understand and write these algorithms.
Monolithic group, totally. At least, right? Like from what we see in the film.
And then they just let them go and like they don't even understand it. Mm-mm. So, you know, what you're watching a video on YouTube and what gets selected next is all part of an algorithm to like go down like a YouTube rabbit hole, which we've all done. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's just there. It's just kind of fascinating. It's just fascinating to me. And I think the for us as users, the necessary, what you were talking about before, the balance of it. Like, I don't actually feel that it's in today's age, especially in some of the work that you and I do, to completely disengage from it. But like, how do we balance it in our lives? And then overall, in terms of humanity, it is something that we have to tackle. And there needs absolutely. To be regulation to it. And like any human thing, it has gone too far. And I think this documentary, parents, if you're out there, it's important. It's an important and almost necessary watch, I think. I am not a parent, so I feel kind of like a schmo saying that. And I know you know this, parents, but how it's depicted, you know, how a young middle school girl will experience social media. I think we've all seen it, but to see it in this documentary, it's like it is different from how I grew up, my reality growing up.
And they do a nice job of there's talking heads and interviews, but there are these reenactments. So to Amy's point, you do get to kind of witness a hypothetical scenario. Of course, I'm sure based on all sorts of research about the way these things tend to go, and it feels very authentic, and yeah, it's scary, but like you said, it's probably a necessary watch. Now, on the flip side, there's other films that we can talk about, such as Let's Talk. And so, Let's Talk, as you've heard us mention before, is our mental health documentary. We have our first open to all screening on October 10th. So, if you're listening in real time or on Saturday morning, it'll be October 10th at 7 p.m. Eastern. Links in the program notes. And that too, I think, for anyone out there who is, think, you know, Mental Health Awareness Month, and we talk about, like, why raise awareness? What does it mean to raise awareness? What has that done? Raising awareness doesn't cure a disease. It doesn't find a scientific breakthrough. It doesn't pass policy. What does it do? Well, no, it doesn't directly do any of that, but it actually participates in all of that. It helps to destigmatize. It helps to normalize. It helps to create receptors in the brains of people who are sitting at policymakers' offices or at school board chairs or our coaches on teams. And it actually has a very important role to play. So raising awareness throughout the month of October, raising awareness specifically around mental illness this week, and having one specific day where around the world we pay a little more attention to mental health is an extremely good practice. So if any of this is resonating with you, the film is 40 minutes long. It features five stories, each very unique in and of themselves, all people affected by bleeding disorders in one way, shape, or form, all on different mental health journeys, all very open and very vulnerable. The screenings we've done so far have gone, they've been very powerful. All of them have followed up with a talk back, as will this one with some cool guests. You heard that mentioned already.
And I think, you know, bringing both of these like pieces of content, you know, together, Let's Talk and this documentary, The Social Dilemma, I think, you know, that word mental health, like we have to have like a clinical term for it, you know, in terms of like to encompass everything. But I think just from my own chair, I'm not an expert, but from my own chair, you know, mental health really truly is a spectrum that no one escapes. And it's, you know, it's a journey about wrestling with your soul, and no one escapes that empty spot, and everyone has to wrestle with that empty spot. And there are times in your life that you feel out of control, and there are times in life where you feel very much in control of that. And, you know, this film is, Let's Talk is, you know, kind of an entryway. You know, I think that's one of the things that we talked about as a team as we were designing it and creating it, and so excited to, like, you know, bring this story. We wanted people to feel like they weren't alone, and to see themselves just a little bit on the screen in order to take a breath to realize that this is, there are people that have forged the path before you. And
when it gives credibility to that little voice in your head, too, you know, is anybody else going through this? Is this normal?
Yes.
She just said it. She just said it on a screen in front of hundreds of people.
Yes. And just, you know, I get goosebumps thinking about it because, and everybody said this, like, we just don't talk about this in the bleeding disorder community. And we talk about a lot of things in the bleeding disorder community. You know, we talk about a lot. And now we do, we're starting. And now all these stories are starting to pop up. And it's like, really, you were experiencing that? You know, all of these things. And I can't wait to talk to Debbie about it more because, you know, Debbie hears a lot, you hear a lot. And so I feel like this is, again, just a part of the beginning of our conversation and how vital social media is, the internet is to this, and how vital it is for all of us to find a balance within our own self of social media and not. And I agree with you. I mean, I agree with you. I would not, it is such a joy to be able to see like what my college friends are doing and like to see pictures of their children. I would never see that without social media. And again, with these stories, you know, when you have a platform to share, and I mean, that can be very empowering. And so to just find that balance, it's so crucial. And just to reiterate again what you said, and from a bigger level, from a, you know, systemic humanity level, we have a responsibility to push decision makers to like discuss this. Like it should be a conversation, a global conversation.
So we'll leave that there. As Amy just reminded us, we will speak now to Mental Health Matters to licensed founder and licensed professional counselor, Debbie De La Riva, who will be able to provide a little more insight into some of these topics. But before we get to that, I do want to remind you that the Bloodstream podcast is made possible by our presenting sponsor, Takeda. And you know what, Amy? Takeda, they have a website called bleedingdisorders.com. It's really something.
Bleeding
Disorders. I'm sorry, I'll slow down.
No, it's all good. Wait, what was that website?
It's bleedingdisorders.com. And there, Amy, you'll find information, resources, and support for patients, caregivers, and families affected by bleeding disorders, including hemophilia A, hemophilia B, and von Willebrand disease. I was actually over there earlier today checking out their page on how blood clots and coagulation are supposed to go. That's something you and I have talked about at great length. And you can check that out, along with tips for dieting, career building, responding to emergencies, and speaking with your doctor. You'll find it all at bleedingdisorders.com. We are honored now to be joined by the one, the only, the founder of Mental Health Matters 2, licensed professional counselor and community member, Debbie DeLaRiva. Good morning, Debbie.
Good morning, Patrick.
So let's dive right into it. This is Mental Health Awareness Month. We are in the midst of Mental Illness Awareness Week. And tomorrow, Saturday the 10th, is World Mental Health Day. So if there was ever a time to have you on to talk about mental health, it seems like this is the very moment. So let's start there with all this awareness. What is the importance of Mental Health Awareness Month and Mental Illness Awareness Week?
You know, Patrick, it's probably a lot of what you've been hearing about every day. I mean, if I had a nickel for every time somebody said it's more important than ever, that is exactly it. It's a time for us to get really intentional and really just keep that message going that mental health is just as important as physical health. And this year it has taken on a significance, as you know. I was looking at the NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, looking at their website, and they have phenomenal resources just for COVID. And a little bit later, I'd like to tell you about some other resources I found, too.
Sure. Does this seem a little different than last year, last October, or the previous one? Does this October feel like the awareness in general, the conversations at a higher level?
Very much so. In fact, there seems to be the kind of this community, not community, this country, anxiety about being anxious. It's really interesting because people are becoming aware of it for the first time. And those who have just been skating along and not really feeling what depression and anxiety really is are not really knowing what to do with these feelings. And it's what I'm kind of hoping, Patrick, comes out of this is that the general population understands what this really is. It's just when your emotions are so out of whack and our stress relievers have been taken away from us to a certain extent, and that combination is helping people really understand that this is real.
Debbie, do you think because the national conversation is becoming more, I think, more visible on mental health, and words like anxiety and depression and what that means is more in our national conversation, that people are starting to say, oh, I experienced that. Do you think that has something to do with it? Like all this talk that we're doing here on Bloodstream talking about Mental Health Matters, I mean, is this helping?
No, it completely is, because we're doing just like I talked about with you guys before. You know, now in the community with your amazing film, we're normalizing that conversation. And now as a country, we're just seeing people that are always on our TVs being vulnerable and just talking about how hard this is. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those positive side effects of this really weird time we're going through.
I know you have done many presentations in the bleeding disorder community about mental health, even in this quarantine time. Just on the top of your head, what are some of the questions that you get most? What are people asking you about mental health?
Yeah, and again, the film is actually giving voice to those common questions because people are watching it and they're reacting to it. And it's just like I talk on the talk back part of the film, it's just like people are trying to figure out, when is it more than sadness? When is it more than stress? When do I need to get some help? Really, people are struggling with family members are seeing it now. And how do you have that conversation, which I think is pretty fascinating. That is the best part of our community, that we are brothers and sisters and we watch out for one another. But people really want to know how to go about that. And so I get to tell people about Mental Health First Aid, which is a course they can now take virtually. All of these answers are there. You know, what does it look like when you're really in trouble? How to give the answers? I mean, how to talk to someone? And then the resources, which, as you know, I'm always completely psyched about talking about.
Yeah, to that point, Debbie, on resources, have there been, you mentioned NAMI and resources for COVID earlier. And I'm curious to know, are there resources that you have discovered just this year for mental health that people ought to know about?
Thank you so much. You're giving me that permission to talk about something that's energizing me so much, Patrick. It's like this, and we'll put it, of course, at the end of the podcast, so people can, if you're not having a pin by you, you can figure these out.
Yeah, we'll have a link in the program notes.
Completely. the Mental Health Coalition is a new coalition that came up. They decided to put everything together, one-stop shop, right? It really started, I began noticing them when they came out with Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter, Black Mental Health. So they were able to carve out resources just for that subset of our population. And then too, they had a feature on immigrant students. How are you really feeling? And there's voices, just like what you're doing in your film, there's voices for them to talk about how they're feeling in this this political time. And I'd like to give a shout out to Talkspace, even though I personally work for BetterHelp, but Talkspace actually provided free therapy for these young adults that talked about this. And the other thing I just need people to understand, they're like, great, Deb, you raises awareness, and Patrick, where do we go? I'm telling you, I have found a couple of websites, Cerebral. You actually, Cerebral Eliminate Health. Now, that's a really interesting title, Cerebral Eliminate Health. They actually, you get a monthly stipend, and you're able to talk to a psychiatrist, a counselor, even have your meds shipped to your home. Now, I just think that's pretty efficient and effective.
Wow.
You know, Debbie, you were commenting about not seeing the questions that we had in advance. However, you have just led us to a perfect segue for the next question, Debbie. What have we learned about telehealth and mental illness through the pandemic that might help us not just now, but in the long run?
We have learned it works. Just like our community's learning about Zoom and how now we're able to reach brothers and sisters that have never really come to conferences or never felt a part of our community.
Right.
Telehealth just takes the barriers away. You don't have to worry about childcare. You don't have to worry about transportation, taking times off. And people feel more comfortable in their homes in general to talk to a therapist. They're on their own territory. And so it has been booming, to say the least. I turn away about, I think I've turned away over 400 clients. Those clients did get served, by the way, by other BetterHelp. Yes.
Wow.
Every week I get an email that says, you've missed 32 potential clients. And they do get served, by the way. They go, you know, to another therapist. But it is booming. It's just the way to do it.
Have you encountered any of you know, challenges related to people's space, if they don't have adequate privacy in their space to talk openly? Have you encountered any issues related to telehealth and people being in their homes? And if so, any tips you may have for people who face those?
Very much so. And one's most practical. You really have to have a pretty good, you know, internet service. That's the biggest problem.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And then the other one's a problem, but it's also really a pretty neat thing, a pretty neat attachment to therapy, because you'll be talking to someone, they'll be telling you really some of the most horrific experiences in their life, and their children will walk in, and then you just see them switch and turn into this, you know, really caring person, and you're able to get a good sense, especially for working moms.
Interesting.
You're able to hear the children screaming in the background and them trying to focus on themselves for a moment, so it just adds a whole new dimension to it, I think.
And just to like pop in really quick, I have found that it opens the door to find a more suitable match. You know, you're not limited to, well, I need this to be close to my job. So I need it to be, you know, only 15 minutes away. And there's only, you know, a certain amount of people there. It really opens you up to like, who is best, you know, across the country. Anyway, so I agree with you. It works. I think that's great.
Yeah, all the platforms have that option that if this person's not working for you, after one or two sessions, you can switch to another one.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is a different than, you know, I'll deal with your psychological stress in, you know, 4 weeks, you know.
And it's certainly, you know, easier than having to drive to this place and then the next time drive to this place. And, you know, finding the right therapist online is just such a lower burden. I want to go back to something that came up a little while ago about people's willingness to be vulnerable. And, you know, it sparked for me, I think it was the NBA draft for the season that we're now in. So it would have been last summer, player after player. And these are all guys for the most part coming out of freshman year of college. So we're talking about 18, 19, 20 year olds. And the majority of them are Black Americans, and they person after person in their after they get their draft number, they do the little interview, when asked about what it meant to them, kept talking about their families, kept breaking down with emotion. Fathers were there crying, hugging. Mothers were there crying, hugging. It was like you could not be drafted into the NBA unless you were prepared to be vulnerable with a family member in your post-draft interview. And I was watching it just thinking, this is outstanding. Like, and we've seen emotion's a part of sports, but that much of it, and, you know, I want to be respectful as a white male, but I appreciate in particular that there are struggles with talking about mental health within the Black community. We've talked a bit about that with Bobby Wiseman as part of Let's Talk. So to just see so many young Black men willing to talk that way, and how many of their fathers and their mothers were also there being open, and the celebration of the, not just that individual, but the family sort of milestone in that moment, I thought was so beautiful. And I can't help but think those kind of modeling moments matter.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. It just, I sum it up. It's okay not to be okay. And we're catching up with that concept now. And it is a beautiful thing to see. And then people are seeing too, that there's not these terrible negative consequences like, you're a loser, you're weak, suck it up. I mean, a lot of those messages aren't happening afterwards because collectively we're getting stronger and stronger. It's becoming like taboo to say something like that, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's not cool. It's not cool to diss mental illness. So with the few minutes we have remaining here, let's talk a bit about Let's Talk. And listeners have heard us mention it before, and we've spoken about it a couple few times. But particularly with the screening coming up tomorrow on the 10th, 7 o'clock Eastern, open to all, streaming on Facebook Live. There's a link in the program notes. Debbie, from your perspective, what do you think, as we start to share this film, not just with our community, but also with other people affected by rare and chronic illnesses, as we do have Global Genes and the Mighty and the Courageous Parents Network and the Rare Disease Film Festival, we have a lot of partners who are making their audiences aware of this screening. What do you hope that those Beyond Bleeding Disorders audiences might take away from Let's Talk?
I think what's going to happen is that there's this commonality that's going to come out of this. Because really, when you think about it, we all have this one thing in common, and which is we have an invisible condition many, many times. And I think a lot of people just feel that way because it's not apparent or it's a rare disorder. And so I just think that this partnership that you've developed is going to help other people understand about us and then help them also feel understood and gain that momentum. So I'm really, really excited about being a part of that. Good job, Patrick.
I thank you. And thank you for all the help with the entire project, from helping identify what are, to the point you made earlier about the film does bring up some of the most commonly asked questions. You know, you can't plan what people are going to say in a documentary, at least not in a good one, but you can plan the circumstances whereby you enable the magic to happen, so to speak. And, you know, between all of the conversations we had, finding the right people to represent as many different substantiated viewpoints within bleeding disorders in a film that's only 40 minutes long, it was quite a task. And I think we did a great job. And you were a big part of that, Debbie. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. Thank you for that opportunity.
So Let's Talk tomorrow, October 10th, World Mental Health Day. Celebrate World Mental Health Day by participating in Let's Talk. Debbie and I will be part of the talk back along with some other great guests. There is a link in the program notes. And of course, you can learn more about Debbie's work at Mental Health Matters 2, which includes, amongst other things, the Bleeding Disorders Mental Health Resource Guide that she has curated. Again, that's Mental Health Matters 2. There's a link in the program notes. Debbie, it is always a pleasure. Thank you for coming on during this most appropriate week, and I am sure we will talk to you again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you. Keep up the good fight, Patrick.
Hi, listeners. You've heard me talk about the Pain Podcast before. It's another show that I host all about pain, what it is, how it affects us, and how we respond to it. And we're currently casting for season 2 of the Pain Podcast, which will be focused on patient odysseys. So if you or a loved one has got a pain story that needs to be told, visit believeltd.com/painpod and submit a casting form to be considered. We never share your info with anyone. You can email mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com with any questions, and you can listen to all of season one of the Pain Podcast by visiting bloodstreammedia.com and following links, or you can search for Bloodstream's Pain Podcast on your preferred podcast player. And a big thank you to Trumeau Pharmaceuticals for sponsoring the Pain Podcast. Thanks again, Debbie, for coming on. Mental Health Matters Too. Link in the program notes if you'd like to see more of the resources that Debbie has compiled. And Amy, she really has been working tirelessly now for the last number of years for this community in this specialty.
Also, I just love Debbie. Like, I feel, and I know you feel this too, and I'm sure people listening are like, correct, 100% correct. I love talking to Debbie. Like, when I have to do work things, like, we always do 15 minutes of work and then we do 45 minutes of just talking.
Yes. Well, she's a great, she's a very warming presence.
Yeah.
Very calming presence. She's very open.
She's also
presence.
A hoot. Like, she's a mom. And so she has like a mom energy, and she's a hoot and a holler. I love her.
You know, her son and I have the same birthday. Have we talked about that?
No.
Yeah. Jorgito and I have the same birthday, November 30th.
Oh.
Fun fact. Do with that what you will. reminder to everybody, if you're listening in real time, tonight, Nord's Rare Impact Awards, October 9th, 7 p.m. Eastern, and tomorrow, Believe's World Mental Health Day screening of Let's Talk, October 10th at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard. Letstalkmh.com for more links in the program notes. And that, my friends, is all for this episode. Special thanks to everyone at Bloodstream Media and Believe Limited who makes this Bloodstream podcast possible. And thanks as well to Debbie De La Riva and our presenting sponsor, Takeda. Visit bleedingdisorders.com to learn more about their work and resources. Subscribe to the Bloodstream podcast wherever you listen if you haven't already. Leave us a rating in the Apple Store if you haven't already.
Yeah.
Share this episode with a friend even if you have already. You have more than one friend you can share this. You can share this episode, your old episodes with other friends. You could make new friends and just to share the episodes. There's a lot of options with the friend one, but word of mouth is ultimately the best way we reach new people. And if you have a topic you'd like to hear us discuss, if you want to share your bleeding disorder story on the pod, email us mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com. And hey, do you have a chronic pain story to share? Submit it to be considered for season two of the Pain Podcast, believeltd.com/painpod. You know where else you can find that link, Amy?
Where?
In the program notes. Connect with Bloodstream Media on social media, or don't if you don't want to. But if you do, here's where we are. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, or you can follow Amy or me, Amy Board, Patrick James Lynch. We're on all those places, as well as LinkedIn. Shout out to all the committed LinkedIn users in the audience. Check out the show notes again for this episode in your podcast player, or on bloodstreammedia.com to find the links and information related to the stories and segments featured on this episode. I'm your host, Patrick James Lynch, alongside, as always,
my name is Amy Board, co-host.
And until next time, take self-care of yourself and take care of your mental health. Bye, everybody.
Please. Bye.